All right. Welcome to number 12 episode of Mountain Man Nutrition. We have a special guest today, Ron Garrett, also known as the Big Black Christian on Facebook, which is super cool because if you see pictures of Ron, you absolutely know that he's a Big Black Christian. Ron's a power lifter, ex-Army soldier. And also the most important thing is why I have him on here is Ron has reversed his type 2 diabetes and he is on a ketogenic diet and he has a great story to tell. And how you doing, Ron? Welcome to the show.
Oh, man, I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for having me on, man.
Oh, not a problem. It's the way I found Ron was, of course, I follow other podcasters and Keto Savage. Is one of my favorite ones to follow. And Ron was on Keto Savage podcast. And I was like, wow, this guy has a great story and he's doing it. He's living the life and he's had struggles, but he's doing it. And I wanted to have you on, man. And I appreciate you being here.
All right. Thank you, man. It's my honor, man. It's an honor and privilege.
Great. Hey, Ron. So tell us a little bit about your background and your story.
Oh, man. I grew up in East Texas, a little town called Lufkin. Then I raised in Tyler. Then I went back to Lufkin and finished my graduated from high school. Joined the Army back in 1985 and served for about 13, 14 years. And then
hey, Ron,
got out.
Thanks for your service, man.
Huh?
Thank you for your service.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I, you know, I'm just trying to keep it generic a little bit. But, yeah, I enjoyed it, man. You know, I grew up in some pretty tough circumstances. And one of the reasons that I joined the Army was to sort of get out of the neighborhood that I was in because, you know, as I looked around, so many people were going to jail, going to prison. And I'm a baby, a product of that crack environment. And then when the gang proliferation started spreading from the West Coast over, that was sort of the era that I grew up in. And so, you know, dangerous times, a lot of things happening. So I knew that I didn't want to be like a lot of my family members and a lot of my friends who stayed local and ended up in prison. And I was actually doing a lot of things at that time that could have made me end up in prison.
It's a miracle, Ron, that I'm not in prison from alcohol and drug addiction and fighting and lifestyle. I get it.
You know, I was able to catch a couple of glimpses of your story as I followed you and everything. Been following you for a little bit now, and it's awesome, man. Because we don't have the same background, but we have things in our background that could have ended us in prison.
Absolutely. You know? And I'll tell you one thing that really strikes me about you, and I really feel this about myself. There's just some very on-purpose, conscious decisions that we've both made in our lives that have changed everything for us.
Yeah, man, yeah. And I believe, like sort of get off a little bit, I believe that for both of us, our faith, the things that we do now to calm our energies down, for me is prayer to my God, and then for you is Buddhism for practicing. And I thought that was so cool when I read that because I'm not one of these guys that try to beat other people up about their deal. Your deal is your deal, man, and I respect it and honor it. I have friends from all different countries, Muslims and all that. I am very open and honest about my faith and what I believe. But I ran away from Christianity when I was a kid because I saw so many Christians not really walking out their faith. And they were saying one thing, and the Bible actually read something else, so I just stopped going to church. So that's later on down in the story. But I also, like I said, I the jobs that I've had, I've always had to work with people of different faiths. And there's a commonality in everything. And the main thing is respect. And what my Bible reads is tell me I have to respect everyone, no matter what their faith is. And I try to live my life to honor that, and that's why I can. That's the reason, you know, I actually have some Christian friends who don't really like me talking to my Muslim friends.
Right?
Like, man, that's how the heck am I going to live life and do what I'm supposed to do according to what my Bible says if I don't do that? I said, it's easy to stay inside your house and make a living doing what you're doing. You're really supposed to get outside the walls. And that's sort of what we teach in the circle of Christianity family that I have here locally. That's what we do. We get outside the walls of the church and we just love people, man. We love people. We love people. No matter if you're in the LGBT community, the Muslims, whoever, man, we love you.
Right. Yeah. That is a big part of your story. I know down the line, you do a lot of, work with young black men,
city. And so going back to what I was saying, with the story. So that was how I got out. I just had to get a way out. There really wasn't a way out. I got hurt. So I couldn't play football. So I had to really look. I was always a good athlete. So I had to look for a way to get out. And the Army was the best way for me to get out, like it is with a lot of people, black, white, or other. You know, yeah. It was just a way to get out and start making a life for yourself. You can use the military. They use you. But you can also use the military to change your life.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people get out of their family system utilizing the military. And if that's what you have to do to get out, then that's what you have to do to get out.
Yeah, and that's what I did, man, because like I said, the things I was doing, man, upon graduation from high school, man, if I had got caught, I would have been in prison. Yeah. You know, I was selling drugs. I was, I was small time. No, I don't want to make it sound like I was a kingpin because I was too chicken to be a kingpin.
Were you overweight then? How was your diet back then?
No, brother. I didn't get overweight until I was about 36, you know. So you're talking about 16, 17, 18 right now. And no, man, I was actually I looked like a natural bodybuilder, even though I really didn't lift weights back then. I was cut. There's actually a picture on my Facebook that shows how cut I was, and I hadn't even started really lifting weights. I was very strong. I lifted weights for football, but not for powerlifting or bodybuilding.
Right.
So that was on a couple of years later. So I joined the Army, went to Korea, sort of changed my life. Started, you know, all my life I never really had those positive influences to tell me because I grew up without a father. So I never had those positive influences to really influence me to do things right. So when I joined the Army, it was the reverse. I had all of these men in there that were all of a sudden, I had been told I was dumb most of my life. I wasn't going to amount to nothing. I wasn't going to be anything. I was going to end up in prison, jail like everyone else. Or I would stay there and just work in the local industry, just shelling out a living, which would have been cool if I could have done that. But I wasn't headed that path. Right. I was headed towards prison, you know. So I had all of a sudden, I had all these men telling me, hey, man, you're smart. Hey, man, you know, you can be a good soldier. You know, you can make something out of yourself. Just the opposite of what I had been hearing back home. Even amongst my family members, I was told I was dumb and all this other stuff. So fast forward a few years later, I became pretty successful in the Army. That's when I got into powerlifting and bodybuilding because I was just walking one day and this guy stopped me. He said, hey, man. He said, what do you lift at? And I'm like, nah, man, I don't lift. I do 400 or 500 push-ups every other day. I don't really lift weights anymore. I said, because weights are just a pain in the butt. It's too hard to get to the gym. And he said, man, you have a natural build. He said, you really need to think about bodybuilding. So a couple weeks later, I just met him in the gym and started lifting. And I was always naturally strong. When I first started, I was already bench pressing close to 300 pounds.
Wow.
And, yeah, so... Awesome. And it, I was probably about 175, 185 at the time. All of a sudden from there, man, I just shot up. I got up to around 200 and I stayed at 200 for years up until I was about 32 or 33. And my bench press squats, I could squat around 700 or 800 pounds.
Wow.
Deadlift, for whatever reason, I was telling Robert this, Keto Savage, this, for whatever reason, I never was very strong on a deadlift. I don't know why I'm built for it. You would think I could deadlift 1,000 pounds, man, but
right?
The most I ever deadlifted was 435.
Wow.
And it makes no sense. Yeah. I have a female friend who does CrossFit here that can do 315.
So Ron, at this time, how was your diet? What were you feeding yourself to bulk up this big and for the energy to powerlift?
Man, to be honest with you, I pretty much ate the standard American diet. It's funny, I walked around natural. I was blessed with genetics, I guess. Really couldn't have been because everybody in my family's fat.
Yeah.
But I guess I got the strain of genetics in my family to where I could pretty much eat whatever I want. So I walked around at about 10%, 11% body fat. And even when I would cut down for competitions, I would still eat pizza and burgers and stuff like that because I naturally walked around. That's also why I wasn't that successful at bodybuilders, because I wasn't really dedicated.
Right.
Because I had such a natural advantage that I didn't do all the things that was necessary to place in the top two or top three. But I didn't really care because I wasn't into it that much. I actually preferred powerlifting at that time, but I just didn't know it.
Wow, so a lot of carbs.
My diet back then was a standard bodybuilder diet during cut down, which, you know, 6 to 8, up to 10 meals a day.
Yeah.
You know,
tons of carbs, high protein, no fat.
Oh, yeah. Low fat, very low fat. Going up into, even getting up at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes to eat,
wow.
You know, just to make sure I stayed on schedule. And that's why I was in the Army now. So, you know, so it was tough. But the good thing about the Army is, man, you're well fed.
Fed, but how's the quality there?
The quality, it depends on, believe it or not, it actually depends on the military base you're on. It depends on who the mess sergeant was. Back then we had mess sergeants. I don't know what they do now, but back then it depends, because you had some mess sergeants who would use quality ingredients. I had a friend that was a mess sergeant, and he would use quality ingredients, whereas other mess sergeants wouldn't use that quality. They were just going for whatever,
right?
You know.
Well, I don't know.
This guy that I'm a friend of mine, he actually served the higher ranking guy, so of course he's going to use higher ingredients.
What do you take stuff from the mess to eat at 2 in the morning?
Or you No, I would just buy. I would have. Spent the majority of my time in Korea, and rice was abundant.
Yeah,
and really, all you really needed was a hot plate. And a lot of times, it's sad because I was bodybuilding and cutting and everything, but, you know, I was really eating a lot of ramen.
Yeah.
I was eating a lot of rice. I was eating a lot of chicken and tuna.
Yeah.
So it really, now looking back and knowing what I know now, it really will set me up for diabetes in the future.
Yeah, I relate.
I
would get up in the middle of the night, 2 in the morning, and eat 2 or 3 bologna and cheese sandwiches on Wonder Bread. You know, right in the middle of the night. And I was up to like 340, 360 pounds at that time. Super big. So just food addiction and eating all those carbs. So I remember getting up in the middle of the night starving.
Oh, I got you. You know, so I got out. Came back to the States and went through a divorce, which was really messed with me for a while. And I believe that was the beginning of me sort of, because I stopped really taking care of myself, you know, didn't really realize I was depressed and stuff. I can look back and see all of this through the prism of time now, but back then I couldn't. But that was when I started drinking real hard, you know. You know, as Army guys, we're known to be big drinkers anyway, so I took it to another level. and I really didn't get into this with anyone else, but I think I need to really make sure I start telling that part of the story, because that also affects you weight-wise, because that was when I started putting on weight, because the body doesn't have time when it's messing with alcohol. It doesn't have time to worry about food and everything.
Yeah,
it just starts storing fat.
Yeah,
I didn't know that back then.
Yeah, because it's super high carbohydrates, which is just turning into sugar in your body, and you're just storing it, storing it, storing it.
Yeah, that I look back now, because that was when I really started gaining weight, because I had like a year or so where I drank heavily, and was even starting to have some liver problems. And then fast forward, I met my wife, and everything changed when I met my wife. That's one of the times I almost get tears in my eyes, because she was a lifesaver, man. And best, second best thing that ever happened to me, you know. My faith is first, but my wife, I believe my faith brought me my wife. And so
behind every good man's a better woman. Yeah.
Dude, I know, you know, I had to clear my throat a little bit. My wife and my daughters think I'm the toughest guy in the world, and so when they see me get choked up, it's a big deal to them. So when they hear this, they're probably going to get choked up. So. Because they think I'm the toughest thing in the world. But anyway, I met her and things changed. Really had a reason to really want to be around. And at that time, like I said, I had put on probably, I went from about 200, probably 10%, anywhere from 7 to 10% body fat to, for the first time in my life, I ballooned up to about 230, 240 pounds. But at 230, 240 pounds, I actually looked just normal. Mm. You know, I wasn't fat. You know, I was still muscular. It's just that coming from that bodybuilding world, that 230, 240 pounds was more like a football player, 230, 240 pounds.
Right.
It looked real good. I mean, I looked real good walking down the beach and everything like that. And
but so, metabolically, but, you were like probably metabolically destroying your body.
I can see that I had the underpinnings of diabetes. Already.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a good story to tell because there's so many people out there who look good on the outside, but they're still metabolically really messed up and insulin resistance and on their way to type 2 diabetes. Even athletes that are really high that carb load. And things like that. There's a lot of people out there that just don't understand they're metabolically messed up because they think they're healthy because they look good.
Yeah, yeah, bro. And like I said, knowing what I know now, I can look back and detail every stage of my life and tell you what was going on with my health. Mm. And it's funny because my doctors didn't.
Yeah.
That's what's so painful about my experience. The doctors, and I don't put it on them, man, you know, they do their deal because of the educational system that we have, the money that's in by Big Pharma, Big Food,
that's
and all
right.
that stuff. And people don't understand that's a whole big part of this deal. I know that now. But so I don't really fault the doctors, but at the same time, it's really difficult for me not to look back and be upset.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that's happening to me now probably could have been avoided had they put me on a low-carb, high-fat diet.
Well, it's important. You're right, because you can't really blame the doctors because the system that they're in is messed up. They only have maybe a week of nutrition in medical school. You know, and then the nutrition that they're following is from the health heart hypothesis, which is, you know, let's eat high carbs and low fat. And so they're still on that boat. Of course, now some doctors are starting to come around, you know, and this science is all starting to come mainstream. So people are changing. But that's why nutritional therapy, what I do, is so important because, you know, we study the whole system. You know, there's not just nutritional therapy that studies the stomach or just the liver, you know, like in medical. We follow the whole system because we understand, especially metabolic issues, are whole system related. You got to look at the whole body and what every organ is doing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a lady here that she's a holistic. And that's part of it. Matter of fact, let me just go and talk about what I was talking about before. And then I'll get to that one too. So fast forward all these years, I sort of ate myself out of being a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
and so I finally got up to about 230, 240. And at that time, I fell in love for whatever reason, man. I just fell in love with powerlifting, you know. And my goal was to bench press, you know, 700 or 800 pounds. And, you know, I got up to about 550, 560 by the time I was 36. And I was walking around about 240, 250, but I still was only about 14, 15% body fat, you know, pretty much looking good. Just a, you know, pretty much a freak of nature. Even at 230, 240, 250, I still could run a sub 4.6, 4.7, 40, you know. But then all of a sudden, my body just started breaking down. Mm. And I believe that it was the high alcohol. Even though I was lifting and looking like a superstar, I was still drinking a lot. I had started drinking a lot again, even though I was happily married, everything, you know. It was just the army lifestyle. You know, we drank a lot and we partied a lot. And we did a lot of things. And my wife and I used to party a lot back in the day. So I started getting sick. I started going to the doctor and my doctor's like, hey, man, you know, you got fatty liver and, you know, you need to change some stuff in your life. So they put me on all these little different diets. And, you know, of course, they worked a little while. but I kept getting sicker and sicker. So for the next 12 years, I just progressively got sick, you know, from 30, well, actually the next 14 years, from all the way up until I was 48 years old. And my sugar values kept climbing. My liver lipids, all that stuff, everything in my system was getting worse every year. I gave my life to God when I was 38, and a lot of things changed after that, because a lot of the drinking and partying and all that stuff went away. But my health never really improved, never rebounded.
Right.
I kept gaining weight.
And you were actively working on your diet at this point, yeah?
Yeah. And I mean, I had times when I didn't, because, I mean, I was used to my bodybuilding routine where mm-hmm. I would eat whatever I wanted until 8 to 10 weeks out from competition. So I could eat like a pig. And then when it was time to diet, I diet. I was very strict. So I don't have that. I have that mentality that when I'm going to do something, I can just do it, turn it on and turn it off. But that's not also the healthiest way to do things
right.
either.
But also the diet that you went on when you were being strict wasn't necessarily, now that we know, a healthy diet. Yeah.
No. Not at all, brother. You know, I know that now at the time. I mean, it looks healthy because you get shredded, so you think it's healthy. And actually, though I look back now, and a lot of that, I believe that those diets, those bodybuilding diets, probably did more damage to get me metabolically damaged than the drinking and the partying and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, knowing what I know now, how big nutrition is in it, I believe that if not more, I would say there's probably at least half, you know, it's probably 50-50, because knowing what I know now is depriving myself of all those natural fats to help buffer a lot of things that the toxins that were coming in my body. You know, when you're getting super low in body fat like that, it's really not that great of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, people want to get down like that, but, you know, you really need to have some fat to buffer, you know. Well, anyway, so I went through all that, started doing all these things. And then, like I said, we got in the youth ministry, and that was when I really wanted to, because when we had our kids, we of course progressed over to youth ministry to be with them. And I kept looking at my kids, and I was like, man, I just feel like I'm going to die young if I don't change. You know, I had that feeling ever since my oldest daughter was about 11 or 12. And I just knew that if something didn't change. So I cut a lot of the nonsense out, but like I said, I just kept getting sicker. And then over the years, my doctors had been saying I was headed towards diabetes. And, oh, it's just natural. It's in your family. I've seen your family history. Everyone's obese, so it's just time for you to get fat. You can do some things to lose weight, blah, blah, blah. And that was the mantra that I got pretty much over the 12 years that I really put on almost 100 pounds. And I was still powerlifting now, so no one really looked at me and said anything.
Of course not.
I'd be in the gym, and even at, you know, 47, 48, I was still bench pressing, you know, close to 500 pounds. And I just never put 500 on the bar, but I could rep 485, you know, 5 or 6 times, you know.
Yeah.
And so nobody, I guess everyone's scared to tell me I was getting fat. And I'm still mad at a lot of my friends. I tell a lot of my friends at church, man, when I look back at some pictures, I'm sitting on the couch with you, dude. Why didn't you tell me I was fat? You know? And so, one of the good friends of mine who I felt like my wife actually got me to start keto, Pastor Scott Silcox, a good friend of mine, he's been my mentor, even though he's a lot younger than I am. He's been my mentor in youth ministry to learn how to work with kids and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually had been practicing low carb, high fat, not necessarily keto all the time, but he had been doing it because he had allergies and a whole bunch of other stuff. And he'd been doing it for years, you know. So if it had been, my wife had came home and told me, so she came home one day and said, maybe you ought to try this because I know you've been struggling. And this was just after the doctors had finally diagnosed me with diabetes. So it was about March of 2017. I was anywhere between 334 to 350 pounds. And the reason I say that is because when I hit 334, I just quit getting on the scale.
No, right? You know? Been there.
Huh?
I've been there.
Yeah, I just quit getting on the scale because I was like, I don't want to know.
Right.
You know? And so, but she came home one day and said, you know, maybe you ought to try this keto thing, because she knew how miserable I was. During that time, what had happened, my wife, I had early retired from my job. My job went away, and they allowed me to early retire. My wife had went through breast cancer a month later, so we walked through that for 2 years. Thank God I was able to sit home with her and take care of her with chemo. But my eating habits got worse and worse because I was just sitting at home now. I wasn't even moving around nearly as much because I was sick.
Yeah.
She was sick. I was trying to take care of her, so I couldn't take care of myself. So a year and a half later, that's when she was finally well, going to the gym, doing stuff. And here I was, all of a sudden, I was sick. And I was out of energy because I had been taking care of her for the last year and a half. So finally, she came home and she told me, hey, Scott says... And she knew that if it was anybody other than Scott, I would have told her, man, I'm a former bodybuilder. I know how to get back in shape and blah, blah, blah. But I didn't. I said, let me try this thing. The type of person I am, and I think you've seen that on my Instagram and my Facebook and all this other stuff, I'm a researcher.
Yeah.
Just like I would research everything for my bodybuilder. I would research all of the things that I needed to research. I did the same thing with keto. And the thing about it was, in my initial introduction to keto, I don't know if you've heard of Carl Franklin and Richard Morris, the two keto dudes. Actually, I started listening to their podcast, and I'm OCD, so I had to start. I went back to the very first one.
And listen to them all.
Whenever I meet someone, I have to go back. The only one I can't do that with is Jimmy Moore, because he's been on the air for so long.
Right.
You know, but everyone else, man, I go back to your first podcast, because it does two things. It lets me know who you are. And I like to see how you grow. I've seen how you've grown since your first podcast, you know, learning to do what you do, man. This is an awesome thing to see your growth just in 12 podcasts, you know.
Right on. I appreciate that.
Yeah. But, but yeah, I started listening to them, man. And when I first started, brother, all I could do, I was so metabolically sick. All I could do was walk around my house for 5 minutes at a time. This is a fun form of bodybuilding, powerlifting.
Yeah.
And I still could powerlift at the time when I could get to the gym. The days I didn't feel sick, I could still bench press over 400 something, almost 500. But I just couldn't move around. And when I first started, that's all I did, man. And then I graduated from walking around the living room. I was able to walk around the block a few times. And as keto was healing my body, I was able to. Then all of a sudden, man, it was just like, boom, at about a month out, I went back to the doctor. I had only dropped 15 to 20 pounds. But my doctor thought something was wrong with my test results, because I went from being HbA1c anywhere between 8 to 11,
right,
down to 6.3.
Wow, that was super quick. Now I can understand.
Yeah, because really, just in a month and a half. Now, you're talking to a guy that would eat, probably before I got my HbA1c tested, I probably was eating half of a container of ice cream. And so,
right.
So for 3 months, my blood was so glycated. You know, real bad. But he couldn't believe it, so he reordered the test. So I went back 2.5-3 weeks later. This is my VA doctor. And not only had my HbA1c dropped down to 5.3, because it's measured over that 3 month period.
Right.
But every other marker for my body and disease, for disease, inflammation, C-reactive protein, all these other things that I've learned about since.
Right.
All the inflammation markers. My liver behaves as it did when I was 32, before I started drinking heavy.
Right, absolutely.
My liver is completely normal now. All of my blood panels, I just got another set done at my eighth month mark, and everything is even better then, slightly, than it was then. So it's like now my body's just on a rocking and rolling now.
What's your A1C at 8 months?
I'm still 265 pounds.
Yeah. What's your A1C after 8 months?
Oh, it's in the fours now.
Wow, that's amazing. And this is the bioindividuality of people, is some people can drop that A1C super quick like that in 8 months. Some people, and I haven't been able, I'm coming up to a new test, so I'm going to see exactly where I was, but at 6 or 7 months, I was at still at 6.1, and I started at 8.9. It's taken a while, you know, and to get my daily blood sugars down. You know, it's been a constant, slow moving thing. You know, where some people it takes a year, some people it takes 2 years, some people it takes 3 months. You know, you just can't.
I think that a lot of it had to do with that. Even though I had gotten so metabolically damaged, all of the powerlifting and weightlifting, I have such huge muscles. Even now, underneath this fat, I still have huge muscles. And when you put those huge muscles into working, you burn up so much of that glucose that's stored around, and then you're able to get rid of it. And so I believe that now that I've stopped, I haven't been able to lift weights for a little while because of some other issues. And it all stems back from all that stuff before. That's why I tell people, man, you need to do what you need to do now.
Yeah.
Because especially when you get older, you may have periods because of what you did before that you are not able to work out. Diet is going to be your friend.
Yeah.
Because I have not put on a pound, even though I haven't worked out now, and it's been about 2.5, almost 3 months. I have not been to the gym in 2.5, 3 months. I have not put on a single pound.
Right on.
Not one. And my blood, like I said, my blood values and everything.
Yeah.
So that's why this whole exercise thing, hey, man, that's good. Don't get me wrong. You should exercise because it does help.
Yeah.
But if you're relying on exercise to just lose weight, that's a fallacy, man.
Yeah, ain't going to happen. You can't exercise your way out of a bad diet ever.
No, you can't, brother. And if nobody hears anything else, hear that part of my story. I have not worked out for almost 3 months now, and I can't work out for another, they said, 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I can be able to start working out again. And I can guarantee you that if I talk to you again in 10 weeks, I will not have been. Matter of fact, I would probably have lost 4
or 5 more pounds. I expect if you're tight on keto and doing what you know to do, that you'll still keep dropping maybe 2 pounds a month. It's pretty average, you know, which is good.
And the only thing I can do right now is I'm looking out at my backyard right now. And after I get off with you, I'm getting out to the pool. That's the one thing I can do. He said I can do that. He knows my history with powerlifting and all that. And I think he's just being overcautious. He doesn't want me to lift at all. The medicine I'm on sort of weakens your tendons.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want me lifting at all. So he told me I can swim. So,
That's huge, awesome for you. You know, it'll burn up that sugar quick.
So I guess to finish off my story, that's where I'm at now. But along the way, like I said, I'm a voracious learner. Never intended to go back to school or anything, but I'm actually thinking about going back to school to do what you do with nutrition therapy now, because I'm helping so many people locally and even internationally. I have one lady in Britain who just hit me up on Instagram.
Right on.
and she started asking me, and I said, this is what you do. I always sort of turn people to keto evangelist, Brian Williamson and Danny Vega, keto counterculture, and Carrie Brown. Those people have been very instrumental, along with the two keto dudes. And recently I've started really talking to Dr. John Lemansky behind the scenes. He's even read one of my emails on his podcast, The Human Performance Outliers, think it is.
Yeah.
And he actually was, he talked to me a couple of times. He's pretty wicked on Instagram and everything, man. He's pretty cool. He'll actually hit you up if you say something to him. He'll actually hit you up, you know, if he has something to really say. But he's very interested, like you, into me helping the minority community and everything.
Absolutely.
But that's pretty much my whole story as far as everything goes, man. My diet now, I just eat intuitively. I don't even really count macros or anything anymore, man. I have, if I want a 24-ounce ribeye, I add it. If I don't want to eat that day, I don't eat that day. You know, I have my keto treats every now and then, and I may go periods where I don't. I'm just intuitive now, but when I first started, I just ate. I ate the foods that they said you can eat. Stopped getting real hungry all the time. I only ate when I was hungry. And I made sure that when I did eat, I ate a meal. I didn't snack.
Right.
And that's been key for me, man. I don't do a bunch of snacking. And I've learned a whole lot about my psyche. The thing is, a lot of times we don't know why we snack. We don't know why we eat this. We don't know. You know, you learn that when you're on keto. You learn what triggers you. you learn all of these things. If you're really doing keto right, you learn so much about, and then what happens is, when you learn how to fix your eating habits and your metabolism and all this stuff, you start finding out that you actually sleep better. The problem that you have with sleep sort of go away.
Sleep is 100% problems, connected to blood sugar.
A lot of the psychological problems that you have, the depressions and stuff like that, when you're feeding your body correctly, I'm not saying this for everybody. I'm not a doctor. I'm not giving anyone medical advice. But I can tell you, for me, a lot of the attention deficit things that I have experienced over the years, I know now that it was sugar. I know now that it was carbs.
Absolutely it was. Yeah, that's
you know, because I don't have those issues no more. Right. I'm fully focused, alert. I wish I'd had this when I was in the military, man, because I could have shot straighter and harder and faster. And you know, and one of the reasons that I got out of the military is because I was starting to get sick and I just couldn't handle all of the taxing on the body. You know, that was happening, man. I couldn't put a 50-pound rucksack on and go for 24, 25 miles. I just couldn't do it no more.
Right.
You know, even though I looked the part as a bodybuilder, physically, I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'll say about the brain issue is, you know, your brain is mostly fat. And so when you feed good, healthy fats, your body, your brain uses it and loves it. You know, and ketones is the preferred fuel for your brain. So when you're feeding it exactly what it wants, you get rid of that brain fog and you're super sharp. And in some of the doctors now that are really focusing on this is telling you that this is the cure for Alzheimer's disease, is feeding your brain fat, which is amazing, you know?
Yeah, you and I have been, and I know because I know the road that I'm headed down, and you're on that road up ahead of me, you know, because of the things that you studied and what you're doing now. And I know, man, and I mean, I have people here that have cancer and different things that, you know, I'm an elder in my church, also a youth leader, but I really try to tell my friends, hey, man, you know, you got cancer, man. I know when you go do your chemo, because I know because when my wife went to chemo, they have crackers and juice and all of this other stuff that they give them when, because they get weak with the chemo. But I'm like, dude, if you just give them a steak.
Right.
You know, you would just give them a steak. If they don't like steak, give sausage. Them some fish and put butter on it.
How about an avocado?
Something, man.
So I
didn't know that then.
Yeah.
But I'm looking back now, and even my wife now, my wife has sort of come along on the train. And it took her a while to find her way. Another thing that keto has done is really given me a lot more patience with people. Mm-hmm. As a trainer, I used to train people, and I have never been a patient trainer. You do what I tell you to do, when I tell you to do it, how I tell you to do it. And if you don't like that, there's the door. Don't let the door handles hit you with a good Lord split you.
Right.
You know, that's always been the way I am, because I don't have time to play around when I'm in the gym.
Yeah.
And that comes from my upbringing. I've always told my daughters, I don't have time to baby you all of the time, because I could die tomorrow. I have to give you everything I can give you today, because I'm not guaranteed another day. Growing up in the hood, I never thought I'd make it past 30.
Right.
Because, you know, so I've always had that mentality. I don't have time to play with people. If you want to learn how to bodybuild or powerlift, get in the gym and do it. And I'm still that way when it comes to lifting now. You come in the gym, close your mouth, do what I tell you to do. You will thank me 3 months from now.
Right on.
You know?
So let's back up 1 second, Ron, and explain to the listeners about cancer and chemotherapy and why the sugar isn't really helpful. So not all cancers, but a majority in most cancers, they feed off of, cancer cells feed off of and love sugar. So when you have cancer and going through chemotherapy, when you're eating carbohydrates and sugar and fruit juices and all this crap, you're feeding your cancer. So what's the best way to stop your cancer cells from growing is to cut off its food source. And that's why if you do the research out there that many doctors, and the research is really heading towards the keto diet, feeding fat to the cells and to your body to cut off that sugar. So what it does is it stops the cancer cells from growing and kills a lot of them. Also, It fortifies and makes the other cells that don't have cancer healthy and healthier. So when you have that chemotherapy, your other cells are not as reactive to that chemotherapy and they do better. And that's what the science is saying. And I just thought that was important.
That's awesome, bro. And I tell you what, now that I'm looking at it, when I look at it, it really has had the same type of effect on me and my diabetes, because when I stopped all the sugar intake, everything else in my body started working better. So, yeah. You know, so that lets you know that the majority of cancers has to be metabolic.
Yeah.
It has to be metabolic because, I mean, I'm sure there's some that are not, but the majority of them have to be, because it actually sort of works the way, same way it did with my diabetes. Everything just starts working better. And if nothing else, it should be, in my opinion, an adjunct therapy to cancer treatment.
Absolutely. And I think as we progress in these small, you know, podcasts and books, and these people who fought cancer and beat it with keto write more books and have more podcasts, because there's some out there now. It's a grassroots movement that's starting to get big now, and sooner or later it has to hit mainstream.
Yeah,
and now doctors are paying attention to it.
Cancer, man, and I've told him what I know, because I don't want him to go to the grave and me not have told him what I know.
Absolutely.
Because I mean, and I'm not saying that it's going to help him or anything like that, but I'm like, man, try it.
You know,
at least try it. It's going to give you a better shot. And at least you, if something happens and you die, at least you know you tried everything.
Right on.
But
yeah.
You know, some people just don't want to listen to it, and it frustrates me, man. But you have to let everybody walk their own path.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And we still live in a world, especially in this country, where people go to the doctors and they do exactly what the doctors tell them to do. Sort of like someone coming to the gym with me, so I understand the mindset. When you know someone's a doctor,
yeah,
you're gonna just do what they tell you to do. But
you,
when it comes to your health, man, you've got to investigate.
Yeah,
you know, my wife used to get on to me about that all the time, because I would just go to the doctor and they told me to take a pill. I take a pill.
Yeah,
but I don't do that. I don't do that no more.
Hey, if I break a leg or have to have ankle surgery, which I probably will be having ankle surgery soon, I'm gonna listen to what the doctor says about that, because it's an acute, it's an acute issue. But when it comes to diet and metabolic issues, and all they want to do is really give you a drug that's going to keep you metabolically messed up for the rest of your life, I don't really want to listen to that. I can't listen to somebody who spent a week in school on nutrition about my nutrition, you know, because I'm actually, most people now too, especially if they're going to doctors and they're educated, are have more knowledge and more research and have done more research on diet and metabolic issues than the doctor has.
Yeah, bro. You know, and it's so funny you said that, because like I said, I just came back from my VA doctor.
Right.
My VA doctor has not smiled at me for almost 20 years. Every time I go in to see him now, he smiles at me. He's so happy. He can't advocate for keto, but I tell you what, he doesn't hinder me at all.
Yeah. Well, of course, because they're not allowed to.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he's underlying saying, keep doing what you're doing. I can't tell you what to do.
Right.
Sort of smiles to let me know, hey, man, I approve of what you're doing. I can't say it because, you know, in that system, he really could get in trouble.
Yeah.
But so he never says it. So I want to make sure if anyone's listening, he never tells me to do keto.
But
he just says, keep doing what you're doing. It's working for you.
Yeah.
But what's so funny about it is, I'm going to make sure I phrase this so I don't get anyone in trouble. There are people that are in that facility who've seen me and seen what has happened to me that are now getting with me for advice on what to do. They're in the medical profession. They have diabetes. With all the knowledge that they have, they know I've reversed my diabetes. So now they're coming to me for help, and they're medical professionals.
Awesome. Good for you, man.
Dude, right?
This
just happened last week. This just happened. Two of them. I'm not going to even say their occupations, but two people who are in the medical profession who should know better according to all of the doctrine and everything they're secretly asking me for help, and I'm secretly helping them now.
Awesome. Good for you.
With their diabetes.
So let's talk about that a little bit with you and giving advice and talking to people and coaching people, especially with the black youth in your ministry. Are you talking to the kids about keto and about their nutrition? And because I know in the black neighborhood or even in any poor neighborhood, no matter what color or race, it's predominantly McDonald's, carbohydrates, and really poor quality food that's forced upon them or taught to them or whatever. And teaching, you know, that you can live a healthy lifestyle no matter how much money you have, I think is super important. How are you going about this?
How it first started was really, like I said, about walking out your life before people. I just was coming to church and everybody was like, "What the heck, man? What are you doing?" You know, they couldn't believe how much weight I'd lost, because I had a period where I couldn't go to church for about 3 or 4 months because of my job. And so I showed up one day and they were like, "What the heck? What's going on?" I had people actually walk past me, didn't know who I was. I had dropped, because I've dropped now a total of about 70 pounds. And it was so funny. I was at youth camp this past a few weeks ago. And I actually had people walk past me. They thought that I was like my brother or something. They were looking for me, walked past me and said, "Dude, I didn't know that was you." You know, so that's sort of what happened. And so I really felt like in my prayer life that, and this is according to my faith, so I'm not speaking for anybody else's faith. This is what I felt like happened to me. I felt like that God was telling me, "Hey, you're helping all of these other people on the internet and at work and all these other things. But here's your mission field right here, your community, the community that you come from that now you're serving." The whole reason I got into ministry is because when I would look at these little kids, especially in the black community, if I have my kids raise up their hands in my classroom or even in the whole program, 95% of them don't have fathers at home. Well, that's what I grew up as. 95% of them have a good, real good chance of going to a gang and stuff like that. I had the same opportunities they had. So that's why I started doing what I'm doing and why I love doing what I'm doing. It's not that I'm not trying. We have other ministries that don't cater to this and all that. I do that because that's the community that I know the most, know the well. And I've seen diabetes my whole life. We didn't call diabetes. We called it the sugar. Mm-hmm. In the black community, it's called the sugar. You know, and you grow up knowing what the sugar is, and you know that a lot of people have the sugar. Mm-hmm. And it's almost always people that are super fat, and we always blamed it on the high fat foods and stuff. Well, come to find out, no, it's all the stuff that you eat with all that high fat food.
That's right.
You know, it's all the rice and the potatoes and bread and all this other stuff. So now what I'm doing is I'm able to talk to my kids along with the Bible. I also talk to them about health and nutrition. And I just really started that because I've been working so much. I haven't even really tailored a message completely, but I do share my story with people. And like there's ladies, they work on the we work boys with men and ladies with girls. That's just how our church does it. It's the best way to do it. We do have group things where we all together and do things. So, but it's so funny because when I walked in, a lot of the ladies saw me and couldn't believe it. They wanted to know what I was doing. And, you know, ladies will jump on it quick sometimes, you know.
They tend to be a little bit more open than guys.
Guys are a little bit more hardcore, you know. We sort of want to do it on our own until we can't no more.
Yeah.
Then we'll ask for help. But ladies, oh, well, I'm trying to look good for the beach.
Right.
You know, so, you know. So I started just talking to some of them, and that's sort of how it grew. So that's sort of what I'm doing. It's just because as I do more research, this is my opinion, Ron Big Black Garrett's opinion. I believe that the reason that a lot of the minorities get hit so hard with this is because of the quality of the food and everything. But also, if you look at our genetics and our history, especially like as a black man, knowing that my ancestors chased antelope, chased wild animals over there in Africa, and when they killed them, they didn't eat the leanest portions. They ate the fatty portions. If you just understand biology and history, if you go and you study what the so-called black people ate over there,
yep,
they ate
fat.
What I'm eating,
they ate liver, they ate fat, they ate intestines, all the good stuff.
And they didn't eat, they didn't have any grain-based diet. Grains and stuff like that and fruit and stuff like that were seasonal. So, yeah, they would fatten up on that stuff for about a month or so before it died off. But the rest of the other 10 to 11 months, they were eating fat meat. And then they had periods of starvation.
Yeah.
And what we call fasting now.
Yeah.
They may not eat. If they didn't kill anything for 3 or 4 days,
they didn't eat.
They may not eat for three or 4 days.
So Nora Gagaudis.
The body adjusted.
Yeah. Nora Gagaudis is a historian in that way. She can really explain the whole history of.
Now, who is this now?
Nora Gagaudis. She's got a couple cookbooks out. She's super popular in this primal kind of world, and she's really big on keto, and it's the way that she eats for many years. And look her up. Primal Fat Burner is her last book, which is absolutely fantastic. I recommend that,
brother. I thank you for that. I thank you for that, because dude, that's funny, because that's just intuitive to me. I'm a black historian.
Yeah,
you know, so. I really studied like our roots in Africa and things like that. So I already knew how we ate and everything, but now it makes sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it makes sense to why when you add that factor of what we used to eat versus what we're eating now, it's like a double whammy on us, you know, because a lot of the Caucasians, they were exposed to more grains and everything. And so our bodies just never have really recovered. You know, and that, now don't get me wrong, a lot of my white friends are diabetic too, but like I said, I don't really speak to that. I speak to what I'm ministering with, the field that I'm in, and I try to explain it to them in a way, because so many black people are really tied up into learning about their black heritage and everything, mm-hmm. and their African heritage, Indian heritage, whatever parts we have. It's easy for me to attack and make them want to seek that informational knowledge base through using that heritage. See, I try to have that strategy, because they'll get interested then. And then for the ones that are Christians, those are the ones I sort of bring in, because there's a when people talk about Christianity, Bible, they say, well, there's a bunch of grains and stuff in the Bible. I say, yeah, but it ain't the type of grains we have today.
Yeah. And
the fruit that they're talking about, if you ate, it's like the crab apples I have out in my backyard. Those are the type of apples that people ate.
Mm-hmm.
They want these big, big monster apples that you have
with,
today.
With glyphosate on them.
Yeah, bags of sugar is what they are.
Yeah.
All this fruit that we're eating today is hybrid fruit.
Yeah.
It's not real fruit, you know? And you can go to some of these islands, Caribbean islands, and when you taste the fruit over there, it's slightly bitter a lot of times. It's not sweet. Except for the stuff that they've imported.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, Ron, we got about 5 minutes left on this, and I just want to get a tip from you. So talking to the audience, what is the number one most important thing that you can tell the audience? Give me one important thing.
One important thing is to, no matter where you're at right now, you can change today. You can make a change today. You just have to want to make that change and then reach out for help. You know, contact MMA Nutrition. Contact me via social media, whatever you want to do. But start today. You are not in a place. When I started, man, I was pretty much on my deathbed. I couldn't move. But I made a start. And start from somewhere and then move from there. And that's basically the basic message. That's been on my heart the last like a couple of weeks. Start from where you're at today. Seek help. And there's plenty of people that's going to help you for free. You don't have to pay any money. Keto doesn't cost any more money. I suggest keto, but I would even say low carb. Just first thing, just remove the sugar. You know, and that's basically it, brother. I don't really know what else to say except for start somewhere. And you can do this. I'm living proof.
Absolutely. And that's why I had you on, because you are absolute living proof. And the way people learn, the best way to learn is from example. You have an example that somebody did it, and if they can do it, you can do it. And I really appreciate that. And thanks for being on Mountain Man Nutrition. I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, brother, it was an honor, man, and I appreciate it. And anytime you need anything or anything from me, and if I'm ever out your way, man, I'm definitely going to stop and hit you up.
Oh, man, hit me up. I'd love to sit with you, have some bacon and eggs.
You know it, brother. You know it. I ain't going to never turn that down. And if you're ever in Bama land, man, holler at the brother.
Right on. You know, you didn't know this, Bobby, but my people are from Alabama, and I lived in Huntsville for a year and a half to go back down and visit and live down there and just kind of reconnect. I was living down there for about a year and a half. Now I was on when we're not recording.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.